Various affection to the brothers.
They have affection to the brothers.
Translation of the great sage Maitreya continue. Vijitasva, the eldest son of Mahārāja Pridhu, had a reputation like his father's, became emperor and gave his younger brothers different directions of the world to govern, for he was very affectionate towards his brothers. Purport after describing the life and character of Mahārāja Pritu in the previous chapter of the Great Sage Maitreya began to speak about the sons and grandsons, the genealogical line of the Pritu dynasty. And after the death of Mahārāja Pritu, his eldest son Vijitasva became emperor of the world. King Vijitasva was very affectionate toward his younger brothers, and therefore he wanted them to rule different directions of the world. From time immemorial, the eldest son generally becomes king after the death of the previous king. When the Pandavas ruled the earth, Maharaja Yudhisthira, the eldest son of King Pandu, became emperor, and his younger brothers assisted him. Similarly, King Vijitasva's younger brothers were appointed to govern the different directions of the world. Maharaja Vijitasva offered eastern part of the world to his brother Haryaksha, the southern part to Dumrakesha, the western part to Rika, and the northern part to Dravina. Formerly, Maharaja Vijitasva pleased the king of heaven, Indra, and from him received the title Antardana. His wife's name was Sikandini, and by her he got three good sons. But Maharaja Vijitasva was known as Antardana, which means disappearance. He received this title from Indra, and it refers to the time when Indra stole Maharaja Pritu's horse from the sacrificial arena. Indra was not visible to others when he was stealing the horse, but Maharaja Pritu's son Vijitasva could see him. Yet, despite his knowing that Indra was taking away his father's horse, Vijitasva did not attack him. This indicates that Maharaja Vijitasva respected the right persons. Although Indra was stealing the horse from his father, Vijitasva knew perfectly well that Indra was not an ordinary thief. Since Indra was a great and powerful demigod and servant of the Supreme Personality of God, yet Vijitasva purposely accused him due to sentiment only, even though Indra was acting wrongly. Thus, Indra became very pleased with Vijitasva at that time. The demigods have the great mystic power of being able to appear and disappear according to the will. And since Indra was very pleased with Vijitasva, he bestowed this mystic power upon him. Thus, Vijitasva became known as Antardana. The three sons of Maharaja Antardana were named Pavaka, Pavamana, and Suchi. Formerly, these three personalities were the demigods of fire, but due to the curse of the great sage Vasishta, they became the sons of Maharaja Antardana. As such, they were as powerful as the fire gods, and they attained the destination of mystic yoga power, being again situated as demigods of fire. Report in Bhagavad Gita states that one who falls down from yoga practice is elevated to the heavenly planets, and after enjoying the material facilities there, he again comes down to the earthly planet and takes birth in a very rich family, a very pious Brahmin family. And thus it is to be understood that when demigods fall down, they come to earth as sons of very rich and pious families. In such families, the living entity gets an opportunity to execute Krishna consciousness and thereby gain promotion to his desired goal. The sons of Maharaja Antardana had been the demigods in charge of fire and regained their former position by mystic power of return to the heavenly planets. Maharaja Antardana had another wife named Navasvati, and by her he was happy to beget another son named Avirdana. Since Maharaja Antardana was very liberal, he did not kill Indra while the demigod was stealing his father's horse at sacrifice. The report is understood from various scriptures and Puranas that the king of heaven, Indra, was very expert in stealing and kidnapping. He could steal anything without being visible to the proprietor, and he could kidnap anyone's wife without being detected. Once he raped the wife of Gautama Muni by using his disappearing art, and similarly by becoming invisible, he stole the horse of Maharaja Pritu. Although in human society such activities are considered abominable, the demigod Indra was not considered to be degraded by them. Although Antardana could understand that King Indra was stealing the horse from his father, he did not kill Indra, for he knew that if one who was very powerful sometimes commits an abominable act, it should be disregarded. In Bhagavad Gita, it is clearly stated, Hapi chet sura charo bhajate mamananya bhat sado eva samantavya samyam bhatasi. So he saw. Thus the Lord says that even if a devotee commits an abominable act, he should be considered a sadhu or a pious man, because of his unflinching devotion to the Lord. The devotees of the Lord never willingly commit any sinful act. But sometimes they commit something abominable due to their previous habits. Such acts should not be taken very seriously, however, because the devotees of the Lord are very powerful, whether they are on the heavenly planets or on this planet. If by chance they commit something abominable, it should not be taken into account, but should be overlooked. Whenever Antardhana, supreme royal power, had to extract taxes, punish the citizens, or fine them severely, he was not willing to do so. Consequently, he retired from the execution of such duties and engaged himself in the performance of different sacrifices. It is clear herein that the king sometimes had to perform duties which were not very desirable just because he was the king. Similarly, Arjuna was not at all willing to fight because fighting or killing one's kinsmen and family members is not at all desirable. Nonetheless, the kshatriyas had to perform such undesirable actions as a matter of duty. Maharaj Antardhana was not very happy while extracting taxes or punishing the citizens for the criminal activities. Therefore, on the plea of performing sacrifices, he retired from the royal majestic power at a very early age. Although Maharaj Antardhana was engaged in performing sacrifices because he was a self-realized soul, he very intelligently rendered devotional service to the Lord, who eradicates all fear of his devotees. By thus worshipping the Supreme Lord, Maharaj Antardhana, wrapped in ecstasy, attained his planet very easily. Since sacrifices are generally performed by fruitive actors, it is especially mentioned here that although Maharaj Antardhana was externally engaged in performing sacrifices, his real business was rendering devotional service by hearing and chanting. In other words, he was performing the usual sacrifices by the method of Sankirtan Yoga, as recommended herein. Shravanam Kirtanam Vishnu, Smaranam Padasevanam, Arshtam Vandanam Dasyam, Sakyam Amanavidanam. Devotional service is called Kirtan Yoga, and by practicing the Sankirtan Yoga, one is very easily elevated to the planet where the Supreme Lord resides. Out of the five kinds of liberation, achieving the same planet where the Lord resides and living with the Lord there is called Salokya liberation. Antardhana, the son of Maharaj Antardhana, had a wife named Havirdani, who gave birth to six sons named Vahishat, Gaya, Sukla, Krishna, Satya, and Jitavrata. The great sage Maitreya continued, "My dear Vidura, Havirdana's very powerful son named Vahishat was very powerful in performing various kinds of fruitive sacrifices. He was also expert in the practice of mystic yoga. By his great qualification, he became known as Prajapati. Purport in the beginning of the creation, there were not many living entities, and consequently the very powerful living entities or demigods were appointed as Prajapatis in order to beget children, increase the population. There are many Prajapatis. Brahma, Daksha, and Manu are sometimes known as Prajapatis. And Vahishat, the son of Havirdana, became one of them." So this is all this introduction to the story of ultimately the King Ranjana story, which continues so many chapters later. But it also traces the lineage, which is one of the purposes or one of the goals of the Puranas, is to trace the history. So one of the topics is called Manvantara. So the Manu was established, in this case Swayambhuva Manu, and then the descendants gradually appear from that, including Dhruva and Priyavrata, etc. And then, of course, in this lineage, somehow Vena got in there and he was killed, so therefore the sage is made Prithu. So then Prithu and Archie, they created a new lineage. And so this lineage is now described here. All this takes place within Swayambhuva Manvantara, the first part of the day of Brahma. So, Prithu had sons. The eldest son, Vijitasvara Antardhana, became the king. And of course, the story is described how he stole the horse and everything like that. How Indra stole the horse and then his son retrieved it. So he had sons, and in this way, the lineage was carried on. And then in the course of that, we have this whole story about the body shot and his addiction to sacrifices, and then the story of Ranjana, which takes up a major part of the book, the canto. So here we have the descendants of Prithu. So they ruled in a very qualified way. And as explained here, Andradana was not very interested in ruling, so he retired early and did not continue his reign, and then he gave it to his sons. Of course, here a reign would consist of thousands and thousands of years, not just a few years. So, because he was not interested in ruling so much, even though he was given the kingdom, he began to do sacrifices instead. And although it says he does sacrifices, he actually had a spiritual goal in mind. It was not a material goal. So therefore it says the Paramatmanam, he worshipped the Paramatma, or the Supreme Lord, through his sacrifices. So it was not purely material. And then it says he attained spiritual planet as a result of that spiritual planet. And then his son had children, etc. And then his children, one of them was Bharatiyat, who became addicted to sacrifice. So, that's basically the story here. So the Parikshat also did sacrifices, but unlike Antardana, right, he was quite involved in the sacrifices for the wrong reasons. So from this we get the story of Paranjana, which is told to make him detached from material life. So in spite of the fact that we have good examples in the form of Prithu and Antardana and his son, then we have also bad examples in the sense people who get overly attached. And therefore, some rectification has to take place. So that is why he was corrected by this story of Paranjana. So sometimes the kings are not ideal. They can become distracted by material things, and therefore they have to be corrected. So of course, nevertheless, because they came in a great family, they were still highly qualified. But there was room for some sort of deviation here. So in this story, Prabhupada remarks of how Antardana, he became, he got his name because of his prowess in challenging Indra. And therefore he got the power to disappear at will. He can make himself invisible. That's what Antardana means. So he can disappear. So Indra became pleased with him. And why? Because actually he was merciful to Indra, and he didn't attack him when he stole the sacrificial horse. So as Prabhupada mentions, the reason was that he actually was respectful to Indra, understanding that he was a devata, and he, therefore he was also a servant of the Supreme Lord. So he understood that in spite of the fact of Indra appearing with his father's sacrifice by taking the horse, still he should not be punished. That was his conclusion. So there were, let's say, a confusion of loyalties, one to the father, so he could do his 100 horse sacrifices, and the other to Indra, because Indra is a devata. So he had some divided loyalty. So he decided to respect Indra. And in spite of the fact that Indra had stolen the horse. So that, in one sense, was a good quality because he had respect for the position of Indra. On the other hand, of course, then we can say that, well, he should have respected his father. His father sacrificed avatar of the Lord. But the solution was that he should be satisfied with not competing with Indra. The whole problem was he competed with Indra. Do 100 horse sacrifices, which is the fame of Indra, and he could perform 100 horse sacrifices. So then Prithu was going to perform 100 horse sacrifices also. So that was a competition. So then they agreed that, okay, Prithu Maharaj doesn't have to compete, and he can do 99 horse sacrifices, not 100. So, and that way the problem was solved. So, anyway, sometimes there is a conflict of duties, and it is very difficult to figure out what is the correct action to take. And similarly, with Arjuna, he didn't want to fight because there was a conflict of duties. One was, we have to fight because we know that Duryodhana is evil, and Krishna wants to destroy all the demons, so we have to destroy everybody. The other was, well, they're my relatives, and of course, Dharma, we should respect them. And not only that, they're also devotees like Krishna on the other side, so how can we fight with them? So there was a conflict of interests again, one and the other. In that case, Krishna used the argument of jnana over karma. That the rules of Dharma are superseded by the rules of jnana. Jnana is superior to karma. So though loyalty to family members is on one level, which is okay, higher than that is jnana. So therefore he said, okay, you're not the body or the spirit soul, so therefore it doesn't matter about killing. So you can use higher rules of jnana to counteract the lower rules of Dharma. And of course, then higher than that, of course, is excuse of Arjuna could be, well, if I'm jnani, then I should be detached from everything, so therefore I still shouldn't fight. understand you're not the body or the spirit soul, and therefore killing or not killing doesn't matter. So then why should I kill also? Why should I even kill? Of course, Krishna's reason was don't lament for the killing because it's all bodies and Atma's not killed. But then Arjuna's reply as well, if we're not bodies but we're all spirit souls and everything, then I should become detached from all these karmas and whatever. Why should I do all these activities at all? I could still resign from fighting because I'm not a kshatriya. So then higher than, of course, the rules of jnana are the rules of bhakti. So if Krishna wills it, then that is a higher principle, a higher argument than the rule of jnana also. So if Krishna says fight, you fight for that reason. So in this way, the conflict was resolved through Krishna's instructions. And ultimately, bhakti was superior to everything. So in this way, though there may be conflicts, ultimately, the conflict can be resolved through from the perspective of bhakti. What is the best interest of Krishna? Then, if Krishna's interest is the best interest, then when we follow that, then that overcomes everything else. So it doesn't really matter what happens otherwise. So that is an easy rule to apply in all cases. The only difficulty, of course, is to, okay, what does Krishna desire? So on the basis of that, one can make up excuses. Well, Krishna wants this or Krishna wants that. Or in the same way they made the Crusades in Europe, they go to the, because it's the will of God that we attack and get the Holy Land away from the Muslims. So they all went off to the thing and said, it's the will of God, this happens. Or whatever, conquer the new world, that is America, whatever it says. It's the will of the Lord that we wipe out all the Indians and everybody else, whatever. So one can use that excuse also, unfortunately, that this is the instruction of the Lord. Or even, I think, Bush used that excuse for attacking Iraq. It's the will of God. It's the order of God to do this. So one can misuse that also, of course. So one has to be very careful in that regard. But anyway, for the devotee then, we consider what is best in the service of Krishna. It's ultimately the final choice of action.
How to understand that?
Who?
Indra.
Yeah, on one level it wasn't ideal that he did that because he's supposed to be a leader. Of course, the other argument can be given is that one should not see what the great personality does. That is, of course, argument is given by Sukadeva Goswami when Pariksit asks the question about Krishna and the gopis. So why does Krishna do this? And why does he take other people's wives, the gopis? So then the answer of Pariksit, well, of course, there are several answers, but one is that one cannot criticize the activity of a great person. And we should follow their instructions instead. So that's one answer given. So in the case of great persons, then we cannot really criticize. So that also was given in the case of Brahma, and when he was attracted to Vaka's daughter, and then the Marichi's sons criticized, and then they got cursed for that, and they became the sons of Hiranyakasipu, and then they were cursed again, and then they became the sons of Devaki and got killed by Kamsa. So the respect is there for Brahma also. So in spite of the fact that if he looked like he did this act, still he cannot be criticized. So in general, though the demigods seem to do strange activities sometimes, normally we cannot criticize them. One reason, of course, is that because they're in a greater position, so that we can't criticize this, we cannot criticize the king or whatever. The other, of course, is that often this is the arrangement of the Supreme Lord for his pastimes anyway, so we can't criticize it in that way. Yeah, because of the high position. Simply to respect the position, that's one reason. Other reason, of course, is the arrangement of the Lord for his pastimes. It happens sometimes. Not all the time, but sometimes. That's there as far as practically applying the principle. There may be some complications or whatever, but at least we should not be swayed and to try to judge materially, that's all. We should also see the spiritual aspect and not simply the material aspect. Spiritually, of course, we may have different ideas or whatever, what is the best thing to do, but nevertheless, the spiritual aspect should be there. Yeah, of course. But it involves, as I said, different people on different levels and whatever. But ultimately, of course, we're looking at what is spiritually best for a person, isn't it? Ultimately. We may have different solutions depending on what level a person's at. But at least we're still concerned with their spiritual advancement rather than material considerations.
So why would it be better in such situations to take
Yeah, the sage's curse and whatever, different curses are there. Kings get cursed also. Yadus got cursed by Yayati.
Padre gave the submissive and governance. Sometimes Padre say something like that, you may not be happy with that.
Well, as Krishna says at the beginning, you have to tolerate heat and cold, summer and winter, whatever. So many things in the material world you have to tolerate. What's that?
Activities of advanced devotees is very difficult to understand. Sometimes they are undesirable actions. So how does devotees and yogis relate to them, and how do...
Well, this here we're speaking of very elevated personalities in terms of when it talks about, of course, Krishna. You can't criticize Krishna or the gopis or whatever, or Brahma or whatever, or even the devatas. We should not criticize because they're on that level. And, of course, in Nectar Devotion, the Rupa Goswami says, don't criticize a person on bhava or prema. Of course, prema, there is no fault, but it may be look like an apparent fault. And on bhava, there may be fault, because he's not absolutely pure. As in the case of Bharat, he became attracted to a deer, so we can criticize him and say, well, why did he do that, or whatever. But we should not criticize them either. So that, of course, is one reason, is their very elevated position. But persons on a lesser level are not so elevated in devotional service, so we can't take them in the same way and say you can't criticize or you can't find faults in anybody, because they will have faults. And the fault should be rectified also. So it's a little bit of a different position there. At the same time, one cannot simply fault find for the sake of finding faults in a devotee, even in a neophyte devotee. We don't simply look for faults, we look for good qualities. But if those faults are going to cause a problem in bhakti, then of course we have to try to correct them.
மாதாஜி காசு வாங்கணும்னு மானியை கொடுத்து சொல்றாங்க.
Thank you.